Welcome, everyone, to 2021, the first hashtag SDRS podcast of the year.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm really? Amy Hall. 21. Yes, it's 2021. Can you believe it? With me is Greg Kokel, and we're going to answer a question now from Oregano Jones. Are you ready, Greg?
Sure.
How do I answer this? If it's merciful to euthanize an injured animal, it's more merciful to euthanize a human since they are made in the image of God.
The reason it's okay to euthanize an animal is we can kill an animal for just about any reason. We can eat that animal, all right? And so there is no good reason to let an animal that is suffering stay alive. All right. Why let that individual creature continue to suffer? We can kill that animal for a large variety of reasons, in my view. Okay. Human beings are different, though. Now, that treats humans and animals as if they're the same. Okay. And in the case of humans, we can't kill human beings for any reason we want. We certainly can't eat human beings. They're in a totally different category because they're made in the image of God, okay? And as a result, we have an obligation to treat them differently. And that is, when they suffer, we don't kill them. It's as simple as that. This is an apples and oranges set of circumstances. We don't treat humans like animals. It's just as simple as that. The suffering element that is identified in both of them is not the defining characteristic. Well, this one's suffering, we kill that. Why can't we take this one and kill that one? Because that one's suffering too. Because it's not the only element in the equation. And by the way, lots of other examples you can get. We domesticate animals. Nobody has any problem with that. So why don't we domesticate children in the sense that we, tie them to a bench and make them do factory work for 12 hours a day? Why not that? Well, because they're human beings. They're not animals.
Yeah, I don't see how his conclusion follows. And that might be the first thing to ask. How does it follow that if it's... How does that follow that being in the image of the God, being made in the image of God makes it more appropriate to euthanize? Mm-hmm. And Greg, your explanation there I think was great and really helpful. One thing you might point out also is that we are more merciful to those made in the image of God because we go to great lengths to lessen their suffering, to care for them. The reason why we don't go to the, because you could go to those great lengths with an animal as well. An injured animal, you could spend thousands and thousands of dollars trying to fix their problems, giving them treatments, caring for them, staying up overnight every night to take care of them. We could do all those things. The reasons why we don't do that is because they're not made in the image of God.
In most cases, we don't treat them the same.
Well, we don't go to the same lengths as we would a human being. Obviously, we do go out of our way. We don't just kill them at the first time.
Some more than others, right. And I mean, some just let them go. It just depends on the cultural circumstances. But this is a good point you're making. So,
right.
Keep going.
So the more merciful thing to do is to try and alleviate the suffering, try to cure the suffering, care for them as long as they're living. That's what we do to people who are made in the image of God. And it's worth it because they're made in the image of God. It's worth that time. It's worth those sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what it comes down to when people want to euthanize a human being is that they don't want to – it's an easy solution. Mm-hmm. It ends it all. They don't have to suffer anymore. You don't have to worry about them anymore. It's the easier way to go. Mm-hmm. It's much harder to be involved in that person's life and help them and care for them. So
it's a much bigger sacrifice, but in the case of human beings, it's worth the sacrifice because the value mm-hmm. is different. The general rule here of justice, in a sense, is you treat equals equally. So the only way that this argument can go forward is to say there is something equal between humans and animals that justifies the same treatment for both. And therefore, if one is suffering, you kill, then you kill the other one with suffering. Wait a minute. They're not equal, and that's the point we're making. And so this lets, the fact that humans are made in the image of God puts a whole different set of demands on us. Incidentally, we trim animal populations when they become a problem. All right. And you might have a rodent problem. You might have a gopher problem, which we had in our yard. You might have a squirrel problem. You might have all kind. You might be overrun with all kinds of animals. Now, we then, because we are suffering, humans are suffering because of them, we take measures, and most of the time, most people have no difficulty with measures to eradicate, to control. All right. But when that's done with human beings, this is a inferior annoyance that's a plague on our culture, which was the point of view of the Third Reich, not just with Jews, by the way, with Slavs. All the Slavs were inferior races too. Then we can just eliminate them, okay? And this, of course, we realize right away is despicable. Why? Because humans are humans and animals are animals.
And as society becomes more secular and human beings are viewed as merely animals and as the same as animals, we are seeing more euthanasia because we are starting to view human beings as animals.
Right.
Mere and we're we've lost the idea that they are made in the image of God.
Incidentally, that is entirely consistent with a secularistic, materialistic, atheistic view. In fact, there is no other option available. We are just simply evolved organisms. You can't even say we're more evolved. We're not any more evolved than anything else that survives now. We're not higher evolved. We have different capabilities, but highly evolved means you're capable of surviving the current environment, and we are doing just as well as the cockroaches. So, but we gas termites, but not human beings for a reason. We know differently. So that would be entirely consistent, treating humans like animals, for an atheistic worldview. I'm not saying that atheists all do that. They certainly don't, thankfully. What I'm saying is their worldview allows that. It is consistent with their worldview, where it is not consistent with ours.
Let's go on to a question from David. An atheist challenged me about a loving God and specific evil, a German woman who was imprisoned and raped by her father for decades. What, quote, good comes from that outweighs it? How can God be good if this happens?
Well, this is called the inductive problem of evil, okay, as opposed to deductive, which says if God is good and powerful, there would be no evil, but there is evil, so God is not good or powerful or doesn't exist. This is different. If you Christians claim that God allows evil for some good reason, that would be the counter to the deductive problem. In other words, there could be a God who's good and powerful who allows evil if he has a good reason to do that. And this is the way, this is the standard response. Now, the good reason cashes out in different way with different people. Might be love. It might be that love requires freedom, which I actually don't think is a good argument myself, or the free will argument, which you don't like. But there are different ways that people cash the argument out, and I take a shot at it in the story of reality. I take a couple of chapters to flesh that out. But and I also talk about this particular challenge, and the challenge is, tell me, and this I had the professor at a university in Kansas that asked this question, a philosophy professor, during a talk I gave on the problem of evil. And tell me in this particular instance what the particular good is. Okay? And that's the question. And my answer is I can't answer that. All right? However, it is not my job to show you what the good is it is actually the professor's job to show me it cannot have any good reason, because that's his charge. He's saying there's no good reason for this. Really, how do you know that? And the way I discuss it in the book, and this is a standard response, who is in the best position to know the reason for any harm that is allowed to befall any person in a universe where God is in charge? Well, it sure isn't you and me. It's God. All right. So, I mean, this might see sound like I'm begging off, but it is a legitimate way to answer. God is the only one who knows that. And by the way, I think most of us can look at circumstances in our own lives where something evil befell us. And down the line, we see how the evil was turned into good. Classic biblical example is in Joseph's life. How could it possibly be good? What good justification? What possible good come out of brothers selling their son, their own brother into slavery, never to see them again, and then telling their father that he was slain by animals, and the father going through all their grief? What could possibly justify such a thing? Well, there's no way they would know. In 10 years or so, all their clan would be saved because of the actions they took. God made it into something good. So we don't know. And even if, I mean, the classic example is the Bambi that's burning in the forest fire. You know, this is the one. People bring up these emotional things. But there are two things that are going on here. First, we don't know if any individual circumstance is going to accrue for some good down the line. Recently, we had Thanksgiving, and there's a wonderful story about Squanto that some might know, about a Native American who was captured and taken from the New England area to Spain and then to England, and then was able to be repatriated right around the time the Mayflower was landing, and the Mayflower crowd was starving, and he walks out of the forest and starts talking to them in perfect English, telling them how to survive through the wind. And a Christian telling them how to survive, you know. But he didn't realize, and by the way, his whole family had died through a plague in that area. So when he came back, his whole tribe was gone. The village was decimated. He would have been decimated had he stayed. But this terrible, unjust circumstance was something that God used for the good of the settlers there, and and this is what allowed the flourishing of that community in that area. So, I mean, these are just a couple of little examples, and all I'm giving examples of is how it might work out. So those are instances where individual cases of evil result in something good. But there's also a systemic kind of approach, and that is God has ordained a system of human freedom where we are allowed to do evil because that system results in something better. And that means that there are individuals under that system that are going to suffer terribly, which individual instance of suffering in isolation doesn't do good, but it is the consequence of a larger system that does good. Collateral damage is a way of looking at it. Tens of thousands of free Frenchmen, I should say Frenchmen, not free because they weren't free at the time, died in Normandy because of all the bombings in anticipation of the D-Day invasion on June 6, 1944. But that allowed the freedom of the rest of France eventually, and then of the continent in defeating the Nazis. But that came at a price. That larger good in the larger system of things, the great plan of things, resulted in individual people dying, thousands and thousands of them, in collateral damage. But it was part of the package that couldn't be avoided. And so one could ask the skeptic who, you know, about any particular sin in their life. Why do you think God allows you to do your sin? your sinful things that bring harm to other people. You know, people don't ever think autobiographically about these complaints. You know, they just think about what about out there and not their individual, because you are a human being endowed with personal freedom that has value and has consequences. And to take away the consequences would be to take away the freedom, at least arguably. Again, Amy's not wild about this particular argument, which is okay. But what I'm offering is the argument in principle, that people can see that there are two different elements at play here. And the job of the skeptic is to show that here are examples of evil that have no good reason. It's called egregious evil. But they would have to be omniscient in order to know it has no good reason. And they're not.
Greg, I think those are all great examples. Joseph and the Frenchman and all those things show how, you know, and I will even say with Joseph, it doesn't even say God turned it to good. It said he intended it for good. Mm-hmm. So that puts it even a level farther where it was God's intention that they would sell him into slavery, which if they had at that moment said, how can God be good? They wouldn't have been able to answer. Maybe Joseph couldn't even have answered that. I don't know. But one thing I want to point out here, the question, how can God be good? I think if I were answering somebody about this, I would start with the cross. How can God be good? Well, the Father sent the Son to die for our sins, even though we were his enemies, even though we hated him, even though we had rebelled against him. He left his place next to the Father and came and became a man and suffered and died for us. That's how I know God is good. Mm-hmm. That's how I know he loves us. That's how I know that he is sovereign, that he brought this whole thing about, that it was predicted from long before, that was his intention. It was a lamb slain from the foundations of the world. We know he's sovereign. We know he's wise. We know that he wanted to demonstrate his love, but also his righteousness and his hatred of evil. All those things are represented on the cross, his power. We see all those things. And so we have to start there. So that is who God is. That is his greatest revelation of himself. That's how we know he's good. Now, there was a lot of evil involved in that, right? They killed the Son of God. That's evil. And yet, that was still God demonstrating his goodness. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we forget about as fallen human beings is that the purpose of this world is to glorify God. God created us so that we could glorify him and enjoy him forever. It's not so that everything goes well for us all the time.
It's not about us.
Right.
We're not the main character.
So in order for God to be good, and in order for God to reveal his glory to us, in order for him to do that, there are a lot of things that happen. You know, Joseph gets sold into slavery, and we learn a lot of good things about God. A lot of people are saved. A lot of things happen that are good in terms of glorifying God. Now, a lot of people will kind of balk at that, saying, well, that's a horrible, evil God. But again, go back to the cross. Mm-hmm. It's not horrible and evil of him if he actually is that good, if he actually is worth it, if his glory is worth the suffering that we go through here. And I think it is. But that's exactly where the atheist isn't going to understand that. So that's going to be a little bit difficult mm-hmm. to explain that. But when people do evil, they're also, in the end, going to glorify God's righteousness and his justice. Mm-hmm. And so as people turn away from him and they do evil, we see the depth of evil. We see what evil is, and we see God's righteousness. And we will see God's righteousness for eternity. as he punishes those who have done evil for eternity.
You know, Amy, this is one of the reasons I love doing this show with you, because you add this other element that's so fabulous. Let's start with the cross. That's the way you started your end, which is really great. That proves God's goodness. Now, because we can't see God's goodness in the other circumstances, it's not obvious to us, doesn't mean that God's not good. Look at the cross. That's just fabulous. One other thought that I had is back to the original complaint about the woman who was held prisoner and abused. What's the alternative is the question. And I want to encourage people to think of this question and ask it frequently. What's the alternative? Because this puts the circumstance of what I might call a top-down or big-picture approach, okay? If there is – if this evil proves there is no God, then there is no God. Then there is nothing but us, okay? Given this woman has been captured and imprisoned and I'm not even going to say abused, because now I'm importing a moral notion. Something happened to her that shouldn't have happened. Let's just say she's used in the way that was described. What do you make of this? That thing happened. Now, from an atheist perspective, what is that? Well, that's just unpleasant. That's all it is. Maybe really, really unpleasant for the person involved or the person who countenances it, but it's not bad. It's not wicked. It's not evil. It's just stuff. And that's what you're left with. And this is what a lot of Christians don't realize, that even though on our side it's hard to kind of deal with that, at least our side makes sense of the deeply offended moral intuition that's in play here. But there can't be any immorality without God. There can only be evolution where you feel bad about it and you mistakenly call it evil, but there is no evil standard judging it. That's all you're left with, okay? If that's what you're happy with, fine. All right, this thing, there is no God, and that's not evil. Is that better? What's the alternative is the question.
Mm-hmm.
And let them try to answer.
Yeah, so, yeah, that is a great point, and I doubt many atheists have even thought about that, right, unless they're involved in online discussions, which I'm sure Christians will challenge them on this. But I think a lot of them haven't even considered that.
Mm-hmm.
Look, in the end, we know there will be two groups of people. There will be those who join in celebrating God's glory and enjoying it. And there will be those who demonstrate God's righteousness through his justice, through his wrath. And so everything that happens in this world is playing into one of those two things. And I don't know how the people in this story will end up, or where they will end up, or what they believe about God. But everything that's happening in this world is leading to one of those two destinations for people. And both of those destinations ultimately will glorify God's perfect goodness. Because remember, it's his goodness that punishes evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will see that even in the people who sin and are separated from him forever. So this is his story. And again, this is something atheists have a really difficult time understanding. But Greg, I thought that the examples you gave are so helpful in just giving them a concrete thing to see, to make them question the fact that they know exactly what will end up bringing about good and what won't.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I feel a little self-conscious making reference to the story of reality, but I do deal with a lot of this stuff in there because they are standard things that come up against the Christian worldview. There's actually a short chapter in there titled In Between that was inspired when I answered a question during a Q&A in some city way up in northern Canada, you know, in Calgary, it was 25 below or something like that outside. But and it made it into the book, and I got to be able to go back to that church and let them know you're in chapter 27 or whatever it was. But it's the chapter, short chapter, is called In Between. And the point that, because this exact same question was raised, why did this happen to my daughter? And the point is simple. We can, knowing the story of reality, we understand why there's evil in the world and what God is ultimately going to do about it. We see the big picture. We also see the perfect justice or the perfect mercy alternatives that you just described a few moments ago, Amy. But what we can't answer, even though I mentioned D-Day earlier, there's a war raging, there's a foe that's being defeated, we're going to fight until it's over. And we know, in our case, that we win in the end because God is bigger than Satan. But still, there's a battle raging. And in any battle, we don't, even though we know the justification of the larger war and battle, we don't know why a particular soldier took a particular bullet on a particular day on a particular hill and died. We don't know that because we can't know that. But the bigger picture is evident to us. And that's turns out to be, as I've said before, the best explanation for the way things are.
All right. Thanks, Greg. And thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions. Send those questions in on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.